This is Dave Glowatz. I'm here with the Chicago Reader's Ben Jarofsky. Long time, Ben.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. To quote Eugene Levy, I did not know that.
Today we're talking about your article titled Whittier, What Fanned the Flames, that appeared in the Reader on November 11th, 2010. This article describes some of the things that preceded the sit-in by parents of students at Whittier School, which is a public school on the South Side. The parents were sitting in a field house for about a month to prevent Chicago Public Schools from destroying the building, which the public schools said was dangerous facility. And the parents said, no, it's not dangerous. In fact, our engineer says it's okay and we need a new library. That was the gist of that conflict. And you describe the, as far as we can tell, completely unreported connection with a nearby private school, Cristo Rey, which is run by a religious order, the Society of Jesus, otherwise known as the Jesuits. You also described a meeting between 25th Ward Alderman Danny Solis and representatives from Whittier School and Cristo Rey. And among the Whittier representatives were members of the Whittier Local School Council. I don't hear about the role of local school councils that much anymore, nor did I hear about it in the reporting on this occupation of the field house. And I'm wondering whether it might help our listeners a little bit to understand the role of local school councils in schools. Now, local school councils, correct me if I'm wrong, came about somewhere around 1990, right after Mayor Daley came into office.
Wasn't it right? Yeah, I guess that's good enough. 89, 90, something like that. Yeah,
89
right.
was Daley was elected, correct?
And a great year it was. The local school councils emerged from I think the law was passed in 88, but it could be 89. My memory's fuzzy. And you're right. The first election may have been when Mayor Daley was already the mayor. The whole principle behind local school councils is that, God, it's just ironic even talking about this where we are today, but we need local control. That what will really make education work is if the people who are most directly affected by it, parents, teachers, and community reps, get together to govern their local schools. And it would be small d democracy in the public schools. And so local school councils were created, and they consist of a couple of teachers. God, do it. Can I still do this? A couple of community reps. That's four. And then six parents. And then the principal. There's two big jobs they have. One is to select a principal. And then two is to decide how they spend the so-called discretionary budget. And discretionary budgets are generally poverty money, money that follows the child, the number of poor kids in a school that the state sends. Now, things have changed, so they don't have as much discretionary control over this money. A lot of it goes as a portion directly to the Board of Ed these days. And more, in many instances anyway, they don't have say so over the principal. You know, the board, if chooses, can overrule.
And that's a pretty significant change, right? Because the fact of local school council control to the degree of hiring the principal and controlling the discretionary budget, that was a big change
Yeah,
from
well,
central control. And now the Chicago Public Schools has come back in the other
well,
direction.
it within 4 years or 5 years, the flip-flop happened. Mayor Daley decided that he had enough of local school control because, on top of everything else, the local schools had a governing body of local school members, representatives. It was a very interesting setup they had. And it was that governing body that gave to Mayor Daley a list of candidates that he should choose to be on the school board. And Mayor Daley got tired of having anybody telling him what to do, even if they can literally, they just give him a list of names of candidates, and he would choose from that list. And so in 95, the law was changed again, only they eradicated effectively local control and went to central office control under Mayor Daley, and that's where we've been since. That's why I say it's kind of ironic to even think about the notion that local should run the schools, because we've moved the completely opposite way.
Yeah, so the state law had to be changed initially in the 80s to institute local school councils, and then the city actually, or probably introduced a bill or helped craft a bill to change it back in some ways
Yeah,
in
they
the
change. They
90s,
still have local school councils,
but just not as powerful.
they're not as powerful. And this one important change that the state law of 95 enacted, which was to give the mayor sole discretion over who sits on the school board. So he doesn't have to take candidates offered to him by the local school councils.
In your investigation of this particular story about Whittier, did you learn about any of the participation in the local school council in the occupation of the field house or members of the local school
Not
council?
really. I mean, this wasn't really a local school council story. I used to do a ton of local school council stories in the 90s when they were first emerging. I used to do stories like this all the time. and these were more of what we used to call neighborhood news stories.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent to me.
But it was reminiscent of a lot of stories I used to write. It wasn't a local school council story in that it was the local school council governing this. As near as I can tell, the people who were at the heart of this were a combination of local activists, parents, residents in the area. They were actually not affiliated with the local school council. There may have been one or two local school council members who joined the cause. It's not a very strong local school council at Whittier, and the principal, who wouldn't even talk to me, clearly was not a big player in all of this. So it's not your classic traditional local school story. It's more a story of activists who took control of this issue.
Would you guess that if control had not been taken away from local school councils in the 90s, that the LSC might have actually played a role in making sure this field house was not destroyed? I mean, without an occupation.
Yes. The local school councils had more authority and jurisdiction and power in the early 90s. So if a local school council told the central administration that in their infinite wisdom that a field house should stay, it would be a major fight to get that field house to be demolished. There was a major fight in this case, but it wasn't engineered by the local school council. You know, the power of local school councils varies school to school, and this particular one doesn't seem to have a very strong, dominant local school council. But I have to say that if you read the article, you see that early on, Crystal Ray Catholic School met with the principal, and there was a couple local school council members there in the meeting, and the principal and local school council members made it clear they did not want the field house demolished. So it's not as though that there was a division, you know, a split between the people who took over the field house and the leaders, the direct leaders of the school. They were on the same page. They didn't want the field house demolished. Let's just put it this way. It was the more militant members of the community took action because they feared that the board would not respect the opinion of the more moderate members. I guess that's a way of looking at it.
Yeah. Let's talk about the other school, Crystal Ray. You reported that the Jesuit order that runs Crystal Ray asked their congressman, Luis Gutierrez, to get them $1 million to pay for a new soccer field, which... help pay for it, and that the Crystal Ray folks were willing to share with the Whittier school. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the Whittier representatives said they needed things like asbestos removal, a new lunchroom, a new library, which parents wanted to put in the field house. And I'm wondering about a funding process that makes it routine for a private school to request federal funds for something discretionary, like a soccer field, but makes it hard for a public school to get funding for what you might consider essentials.
I share your disbelief. I think it's outrageous. Nothing against Crystal Ray. I just think it's outrageous that that's how our system works. You know, a private school with its contacts, and Crystal Ray has a lot of influential board members, and of course, they have a very good reputation. I'm not criticizing them, but through their contacts, just, you know, within a matter of months, are getting a response from Luis Gutierrez, whereas this ordinary citizens who go to this ordinary public school are begging and pleading for the board to fix up their humble school. So I completely agree with you. It sort of represents how skewed everything is. The reality is, whenever I say this to Gutierrez's people, you know, you were so quick to respond to Crystal Ray, and yet you didn't respond to Whittier. And the response I get is that, well, first of all, this was just a request that Crystal Ray made of us, and it did not mean that they were going to get the money. And so they're sort of ducking the central issue, which is that ordinary citizens in Chicago are largely ignored, and you need some clout to get something done.
Always coming back to clout. We'll leave it there. Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, sir.
This is Dave Glowatz. You've been listening to the rest of the story with Ben Jarofsky. When you get a chance, check back at MrRadio.org for other interviews or subscribe to our podcast. Thanks for listening.